Hi, this is Colin Davis from Shaxbury Cider in Vermont, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 43. Hello, and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincoller, and I am your Cider MC. On this weekly podcast, where we chat with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we're headed to Vermont, where I pre-recorded a chat with Colin Davis of Shaxbury, which is a cider company up along the banks of Lake Champlain. There'll be more on that chat in a moment. I just wanted to share my experience this morning as I welcome the day. I noticed that there was a bit of a nip in the air. This recording is happening at late August, so it's going to go live the last week of August 2016. You might hear it down the line, but today it's a really beautiful sunny day out, but we are seeing that little bit of change of weather, don't you know? And that means that in this northern hemisphere where I am in Ciderville, fall is on its way. And so is apple season, meaning that soon folks will be out in the orchards gathering up the apples, and in no time there'll be cider making all over the land. And there's a lot of celebrations all across the U.S. and different cider weeks. And I just got something in from our friends out in the Northwest Cider Association. The executive director, Emily Ritchie, sent a little notice, a really fun certificate from the governor of Washington State, don't you know, made a proclamation. I love this kind of stuff when the politicians get in on it and really support cider in this way. I want to read it. It says, the State of Washington Proclamation. Whereas cider is the fastest growing segment of the U.S. beverage industry and is experiencing a boom in the Northwest as people long to connect with the land and are seeking locally grown products. And whereas cider was once America's favorite drink as John Adams consumed a tankard every morning, Johnny Appleseed planted cider apples, and William Henry Harrison ran as the, quote, hard cider candidate, unquote, in the presidential election of 1840. And whereas cider and perry, which is cider made from pears, pairs beautifully with food, has half the alcohol content of wine, is rich in antioxidants, and is naturally gluten-free. And whereas Washington, that's Washington State, if you will, is the largest apple-producing state in the country, and each year harvests over 100 million boxes of apples. Put that in the bank and deposit it. 100 million boxes of apples with over 175,000 acres of orchards. Are your eyes getting wide now? Planted in the state. And whereas the Northwest is home to the nation's most innovative cider makers whose ciders are racking up international acclaim. Well, I'm okay, Washington, you could say that. This is a governor, no doubt. Now, therefore, I, J. Inslee, governor of the state of Washington, do hereby proclaim September 8th through the 18th, 2016, as Washington Cider Week in Washington State, and I urge all people to join me in this special observance. Well, you know, I love that. September 8th through the 18th, they're going to be drinking cider, and there's some good events happening there. Check out the Northwest Cider Association. And if you want to hear more, we spoke with the executive director, that is Emily, who I mentioned. And that was just a couple episodes back with Emily, which was just episode 41. Yeah. Good stuff happening. So the fall is a really fun time. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing this fall coming right up is I'm going to have a podcast dedicated to Cider Days. I'll be going through that schedule with you and giving some of my inside tips and insights on the festival and how to manage it a little bit, because it takes place in the county. There's a lot of free events. There's some paid events. And I really want to recommend those folks who want to get in on it early to get some of those tickets as soon as they go on sale, and that begins September 1st, and that's CiderDays.org. And there's one more thing I'd like to cover here before we head over overseas and come back to Vermont. And that's just to encourage you to learn about the new campaign coming out of the United States Cider Maker Association. It's called Pick Cider. And you can follow that organization on Twitter at Pick Cider. And it's all about campaigning for people to have cider with their Thanksgiving meal. Isn't that sweet? I love it. I'm sure there'll be more about that in the coming months. And now I just want to make another weekly mention about my trip heading over to Normandy coming up in September. I'm trying to get all the packing lists set up and everything. But, you know, it's a lot when you go overseas, no doubt about that. And I'm initially going over to do some work. I work in the Netherlands at a psychiatric center. And then I'll be heading down the coast and driving into France. It's my first time there, chatting with Eric Bordelais. Eric is located in Normandy off of what is known as the cider route. There is an actual route that you take stopping in all the different cideries. Of course, I haven't been there, so I don't know too much about it, but I'll be posting a lot as I go along, as long as I can find a good SIMS card for my phone once I get there, because, you know, I'm going to be flying into Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam, and I could easily get a SIMS card for the Netherlands. But as soon as you go over the border, you have to get a SIMS card for Belgium, or you have to get a SIMS card for France. So I'll see what I could find at Schiphol, which is a really wonderful, wonderful airport. And if I do have Wi-Fi as I'm kind of going down, or cellular connection, I'll be posting, or at least posting as I can. And I certainly hope that you come along too. I'll be tweeting at CiderChat is my Twitter feed. And there's also a CiderChat Facebook page that will be getting certainly an album of sorts and other little tidbits and fun things there. And don't you know, while I was chatting here, I saw an email come in, so I'm going to just kind of scroll through it. And what I see, it's a correspondence I've been having with the French president of the IDAC, and that is the Appellation Contrôlée of Ciders, because I want to get more info of what's happening there, besides speaking to Eric, kind of get into the market and have a better understanding of what might be shifting there, what's moving forward. I think that'll be really informative, and I'm feeling very honored to have this opportunity to chat with them and to chat with all of us. So stay tuned for that. Cool stuff, right? Yeah. All right. In the meantime, let's head to the really super duper cool state of Vermont, which is based in New England. That's the eastern coast of the United States. This is not on the shore of the Atlantic Ocean. If you're not familiar with New England and you're listening from somewhere around the world, Vermont is a landlocked state. It's a very long state at the border of Massachusetts, and it goes all the way up to Canada, up to like the Montreal border. I was up there in April. I had chatted with a number of cider makers, so if you want to check some of those podcasts out, you could look for the episode with the Farnham Hill team. There was a part one and part two, and those were episodes 32 and 33. And then also another Vermont author, Adam Krakowski, episode 34, talking about Vermont Prohibition. And a lot of great cider prohibition info in that episode too. This week, though, we're going to speak to Colin Davis at Shaxbury and find out about their business model, the ciders they're making, and their Lost and Found Apple Project. Really interesting cidery. I was so happy to finally find Colin after driving around all over the area. And I just want to tell you that we talked about this, the geography there, but it's outstanding. If you get to go fly into Burlington, Vermont, or just driving up through there, certainly the fall is just spectacular. I mean, the colors alone are worth the drive. And I was kind of lost a little bit. So I do have a bit of a clip that I'm going to be posting onto the Patreon page for Cider Chat. And if you're not familiar with that, that's where folks who are patrons of Cider Chat get like behind the scenes scoop stuff as a thank you for supporting the chat. You know, you can support this chat for as little as a dollar a month. So it's kind of a good deal, because I like to share a lot of things there as I can. So I'm going to give an uncut version of just greeting Colin, being so happy to finally see him as I actually drove by the business, and then finally I found it. But that's going to be changing at Shaxbury because they're getting a tasting room, and we will be talking about that too. Lots of good updates. So without further ado, how's about if you and I grab a glass and join this chat with Colin Davis at Shaxbury?
I don't know if it's a wise thing for me, but I feel some disconnect between that sort of news that I read, sales being down, and the excitement that I see around cider in the places that we visit. You know, wine shops in California that are picking up increasingly, they're getting really interested in cider. Places like Chicago, you know, that have a great cider scene. Going to a restaurant like Wassail that's just hitting it out of the park, you know, in a market that's very tough on people.
They changed, though, too, from when they opened. Like, when they first opened, they didn't offer flights. Mm. But now they do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody changes with the market, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that tells you a little bit something. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, my first thought is like, wow, we're getting, of course we have educated drinkers and discerning mm-hmm. drinkers. And, you know, they're like, I don't want to necessarily commit to a full glass. I want to be able to try that. And mm-hmm. so what does that tell the ciders? It's like, okay, well, hopefully people are getting more discerning, knowing what constitutes a quality product too, mm-hmm. you know?
The other thing is just, I know that the marketplace isn't logical, you know, that, that like the best thing doesn't always win. And, but I do think that just, I think cider is interesting in that it is a very agricultural product and it's lower alcohol. I mean, there's just very practical things about it that like fit into certain scenarios. You know, if you're going to have something with lunch, maybe, or you just, mm-hmm. you want something that's not wine and not beer, but is flavorful. And
is that how you explain cider? How do you explain cider to people?
Oh gosh. I mean, I still struggle with it a little bit. And I guess it depends on my audience.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah.
But
so the audience that doesn't know about cider, I'm sure you meet plenty of people still, they hear it. Mm-hmm. And do you have like a short rap that you say?
If someone was to say, what is
cider? Is this hard cider?
Yeah. I usually tell them it's apple wine. Huh. And those are the terms that we like to talk about our product in.
As
that it's
a
just,
wine?
Yeah, fermented fruit juice. Mm-hmm. Just like wine is, you know, fermented fruit juice. And, you know, there's different kinds of apples that make different kinds of cider, just like there's different kinds of grapes that make different kinds of wine. Mm-hmm. And so that's usually the way that I explain it.
And people nod their head and get it.
Uh-huh. You know, some cider is a white wine, some cider is a red wine. Equivalent. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. So the way that we split up our company is I do the operations and David does sales. And so I do less of that than he does.
And who makes the cider?
I do.
You do. Mm-hmm. Okay, so operations is considered the cider maker.
And you know, financials and compliance and logistics. And we're a small company, so.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
So let's give Ciderville a little bit of an image here. Mm-hmm. For folks in the world who know nothing about Shaxbury mm-hmm. or have heard about it because they saw a bottle on the shelf or they've tried it in the restaurant and they're thinking, oh, Vermont, what should they know about Shaxbury as the image? Because it looks like you're obviously growing, you're doing well. When did the license begin, the licensing to make cider for Shaxbury begin?
We incorporated in 2013.
Okay. And started making cider and started selling cider and...
So we started selling in 2014.
2014, yeah.
Yeah, summer.
Yeah, and you came out with a couple ciders right away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the yourself and David, there's more folks involved than just the two of you.
Right.
Yeah, so...
So we met, David and I, he was working for our main growing partner, Sunrise Orchards, just up the road. This whole area has been an apple growing region for a long time now.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's really rolling hill. I've stopped out of my car a couple times to take a full scan mm-hmm. that I could share for this particular podcast. And, you know, folks should know who are listening right now that it's just big sky country in Vermont. People don't think about that, but because it's right on the east side of Lake Champlain.
Right, so there's a little microclimate here. We're in the valley.
And you're zone 5 because mm-hmm. of that, aren't you, for growing? So it's a little bit warmer than inland.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, David was working for Sunrise Orchards. I was contemplating actually a specialty meads business at the time. And
did you say meads or meats?
Meat. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you noticed my cattle out there.
I did. I'm so happy to see you. Cattle. I was just like, Colin.
And so we were actually looking at, we worked together on a project to look at value added processes for this orchard, Sunrise Orchards. And we identified hard cider quickly as the thing that we thought was the best value add for their apples.
Right.
And so, you know, we looked into that opportunity for the orchard, and they ultimately decided they didn't want to do it. And mm-hmm. at that point, we had gotten very interested. And so we put a tasting group together with some of our friends locally, like Brad at Windfall Orchards mm-hmm. and Michael Lee at Twig Farm and the Grandstroms, who own a winery up the road, and some other folks. And we just started tasting as much cider as we could get our hands on to you know, really decide if it's something we wanted to do or not. And so as in that tasting group, we found that we really loved some, imported cider. And at the same time, we were doing single varietal trials from the apples that Sunrise was growing. So a lot of the usual suspects around here, Empires, Max, Cortlands, and we weren't liking those so much. Something we were liking was Michael Lee and Brad and this other guy, Early LaBounty, whose family's been making cider in Vermont for many generations. We loved the cider that all those guys were making, and the common denominator there was they were using wild apples and they were doing native yeast fermentations. And we really actually liked those ciders as much or more than some of our favorites from abroad. And so that's when we decided that we could make something that we felt great about, you know, selling and representing. And so that's when we decided to incorporate our company, and David quit working at Sunrise. We're still great friends with them. Like I said, they're our main growing partner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, took the plunge. And so,
you took the plunge and leaped and really like hit it right on the dime. I think that's the way Shakespeare feels. Like, it came out of the gate very strong.
Well, that's great.
Do you feel that? Because I mean, from the outside, it looks like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had your ciders. I've had a couple of your ciders. I had the Bass style cider when mm-hmm. you know, we met earlier this year,
mm-hmm.
and it was delicious. You know, really exciting. So
thanks.
I'm sure that's what you're finding too.
Yeah, and I'm glad it. That you feel that way. It's definitely, you know, I think any new business, you know, you have the business plan at the beginning, and then, you figure out things that work and don't work, and you know, the world happens and you have to make adjustments. But I think the bottom line is we feel really positive about where we've been and where we're going, and the people we've met along the way, they're all, you know, great friends now. Some of them are actually part of our company. For instance, Michael Lee at Twig Farm.
Nice.
Inara at Petrotechi. Simon.
Petrotechi.
So that's who we partner with in Spain.
Oh, okay. Okay, yes.
We make cider with them.
Right.
Simon Day in the UK, Once Upon a Tree is his cider company. Mm-hmm. Barney Hodges at Sunrise Orchards. Brad at Windfall Orchard. These are all people who are, you know, integral to our company now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
So it's feeling good in that way. So that's a sense. And now, you know, again, going back to like the folks listening to this, and, you know, I'm sitting in this room with Colin at the home base where Shaxbury was kind of blossomed out of, and now it's obviously reaping the benefits of early success in that way. Mm-hmm. And you do have those partnerships. Shall we talk a little bit more about that? Should we?
Sure.
But let's go to Spain.
Yeah.
You have a Basque cider, and is that being fully made in Spain or?
Yes. Yeah. The Basque collaboration. We started bottling it here.
That makes sense, right?
Well, yeah, yes and no. We decided to have it bottled there now. So if you look on the label, it actually says imported. We do also ship a base cider over here that we use for blending purposes.
From Spain. And that, is that going into other ciders that you're making?
Okay. Yep. So the Arlo has some of that in it.
That's a new cider.
Yeah. So
Arlo spelled A-R-L-O.
Right. So that one was named after my bull here, Arlo the Bull. But the Arlo Farmhouse and Classic are all a blend of either Inara's juice, Simon's juice, and Vermont juice. So they're all a blend of European and Vermont apples in various proportions.
So when that juice is coming over, is that coming over in concentrate form?
Nope. It's fully fermented, dry cider.
And then that gets blended out, yeah.
Right.
So that makes it a very stable product in that way. And it's kind of answering a lot of people, you know, wonder about that concentrate piece again. So I think that's good for listeners in Ciderville to know where the juice is.
We looked at, you know, shipping apples over or shipping unfermented juice over, and the quality question was just too, you know, it's a much more stable product as fully fermented cider. Sure. So, you know, we go over, and in England, it's an especially simple picture because we're picking just from one orchard. It's a 40-acre orchard called Dragon Orchard. We and Simon together decide what apples go into what tanks and in what proportion, ferments over the winter. I'll be going back over again in a couple weeks for blending, and then that base blend comes over here in bladders, flexi tanks.
So that isn't being fermented over there?
It is.
Oh, it is. Okay. When you say the base blend, it's already... Oh, interesting. That's a nice name for the base blend. Then you come over here, and are you using U.S. apples?
Yeah, so the majority of the apples that we ferment in the U.S. are from Sunrise Orchards. We also buy some apples from Farnham Hill, or from Poverty Lane, excuse me.
Right, Poverty Lane Orchards.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all of the established cider varieties that we're planting are... grafts from Cionwood from Poverty Lane.
Okay. So you're planting orchards. You've already planted orchards though too.
Well, yeah. So we've, the first The first trees that went in the ground was last spring. So those trees had already been in the nursery for a couple years, and so that was I think we did 2,500 that first year, and so we're continuing to do more and more.
And what varieties are you looking at, or have you planted there?
Yeah, so it's majority of them are Wixen, Dabinet. So a lot of Wixen and Dabinet, some Harry Masters Jersey, Golden Russet, Espis Spitzenberg. Those are the big ones, and then we're trialing several other varieties, mm-hmm. and then we've got our Lost Apple Project, and we have about 10 varieties that we've found through that we're propagating pretty aggressively.
Well, let's talk about the Lost Apple Project since you brought that up.
Yeah.
And what that means specifically.
Yeah, so it's more like the feral apple project. So there's just tons of wild apple trees around here. If you've ever been to Vermont or New York or Maine or New Hampshire, you
all
know.
All over.
If you go into rural parts of any of those states, there's just apple trees all over the place. And like I mentioned, we were really inspired early on by local cider makers, not commercial, I guess Brad's commercial, but who were using wild apples to make mm-hmm. cider, and mm-hmm. the stuff they were making was just really great, we felt. And so from the very beginning, we started, in 2013 when we incorporated, that first year we did a big foraging effort and identified, so of the, hundreds if not thousands of trees that we sample in any given year, we'll earmark typically 30 or 40 to do single varietal fermentations on.
Nice.
And then probably a couple of those, we end up going back to the trees and cutting signwood for mm-hmm. propagating.
Nice.
So it's the rare tree that.
Right. That becomes back and put
yeah.
in the orchard.
Yeah.
And you worked with John Bunker, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In what capacity was John?
I mean, he's just,
we adore John yeah. Bunker.
Yeah. So. He's an inspiration. He's been doing this for a long time. He's, I think he's more focused on actually finding old varieties. For us, it's kind of a cool side note. If we find something that had a name at one time, that's cool. But mm-hmm. really the bottom line for us is what the apple tastes like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it could be a 100-year-old tree, that has this cool provenance, or it could be a random seedling by the side of the road that's 10 years old. If the apple tastes great, that's bottom line
nice.
For us.
Nice. I think probably the apple trees are happy about that you're not being too specific there.
Yeah.
But I mean, John obviously has his place.
Oh,
because
yeah.
he's doing that service of identifying. That's just so
right.
critical.
And he's, we got a bunch of trees from him this year that are seedlings from around New England. So that's part of what he's doing too, obviously, is, and we contributed some cyanwood
nice.
To his nursery. So either two or three varieties, I think, of that we've chosen to propagate, we shared with him
great.
This year.
Yeah.
So those will be part of his catalog
nice.
In the future.
Nice. From those, like the feral trees.
Right. Yeah.
yeah.
They're just,
yeah.
I
like
random.
that terminology, feral trees, because it's the way they look and feel in that way too.
Yeah, so part of why we call it the Lost Apple Project is just because it's easy for people to wrap their heads around. It kind of sounds. It gives people who don't necessarily understand how you get, how you propagate apple trees.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's kind of
part of the education,
yeah.
really, for a lot of folks. Are you labeling the ciders that are made with these apples that you're gleaning from the wild
yeah.
in that way?
Mm-hmm.
And what would folks look for on the label to know? that? Would it clearly it would say just, the lost apple pucker?
Yeah, so most of our ciders we try to put on the, usually on the back label, you know, the apples we used, where they're from. And again, this is something that's evolved, you know, our labeling. But that's currently what we're, you know, we want to transition all of our ciders to say what apples are in there, where they're from, how it's fermented. And so that's where it would show up.
Yeah.
And so some of them are a blend, like the Lost and Found that we did last year. That was a blend of wild apples and apples from Poverty Lane. Mm-hmm. There's others like 1840 or the Pet Nat this year that are 100% mm-hmm. foraged apples. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And you know what I think is interesting about Shaxbury, and I want the folks in Ciderville to know, like your bottle shape is like a very, you know, clean lines on it. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, and I'm wondering, you know, in the mission of the business piece of that, or just the heart piece, you have Spanish mm-hmm. style, you have a UK style, and then mm-hmm. you have American. So what is Shaxbury?
It's a blend. It's a, you know, a collaboration. And I feel like that's, both David and I are, that's kind of our style. We love to collaborate. And whether that means, you know, this kind of collaboration we're doing with Simon or Inara, or a collaboration that we do with a specific restaurant or a specific retailer. It's really something that we enjoy about being in this business is sharing with other people and mm-hmm. learning from them. And so that's a really important part of the sort of DNA of our company.
Right. And I think that's something good for cider makers listening and folks, you know, thinking about cider in general, is that it has to be, you know, bigger than the village in mm-hmm. that way. Mm-hmm. And I think you've really set up a nice model for people to look at in that way, that there's that possibility to go outside of your own orchard and to pull in these skills. Obviously, you're well connected. You guys must be like, you know, magnets in that way for good apple cheer.
Yeah, I think part of it is just either having the courage or the naivete to just ask, you know, if someone's interested in working
yeah.
with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think more often than not, other people are looking for that as well.
Yeah.
And we just felt at the beginning like, and still feel like we have so much to learn, you know, from other people that it's been important in that sense as well.
Where did you learn, or how did you come into cider making? And where did you learn cider making?
Came into it and through working with a local orchard. Just really stumbled into it. I wasn't expecting.
Were you expecting to do something different?
Yeah, I was expecting to start a specialty meat company, so cured meats.
But is that because of a farming tradition in your family?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've always lived in rural areas. I was born in rural Minnesota. I lived in South Dakota before coming to Vermont.
And your family's here.
Yeah. Wow. My dad's in agriculture. He's retired now, but okay. So that's my background. Same thing with David, my partner, and yeah. he was working for an orchard
when
we met. And so, one of the things that appealed to both of us a lot was that, it seems like apples, this is a great place in the world to grow apples.
And mean
the
this
Champlain
location?
Valley, okay. Champlain Valley mm-hmm. of Vermont. Hard cider seems like a great way to add value to apples and to have. We like the fact that there's a product that can command a price that will translate to a good price for farmers. you know, we feel like hard cider, people are willing to pay for quality, whereas people might not be able to willing to pay for the quality of a fresh eating apple. And so farmers who are making exceptional fruit, hopefully will be able to get better prices through hard cider.
Well, what are you hearing from the farmers around here? I mean, now there's like two cideries just in this one town.
Yeah.
Champlain Orchards, right. And Shaxbury.
I mean, right. Well, and Woodchuck right up the road.
And of course, Woodchuck, right.
And they're using a lot of local apples as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're able to, you know, have very large growing contracts. And maybe they're interested in, you know, different apples than we are, maybe not, but that's a really important part of the equation, mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great. I think the growers around here, so Champlain Orchards and Sunrise Orchards, who's our main growing partner, they're the two biggest orchards, I think, in the state.
No.
And they're both investing a lot in cider apple production. So
that's great news.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's so interesting because there's, you know, cider makers on both sides of Vermont, and the terrain is so different.
Mm-hmm.
So you already have a variation of terroir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, a lot of the foraging we do is actually in the mountains.
Oh, well, interesting.
And it's something that we're very interested in.
Mm-hmm.
We're really interested in either having our own orchards up there or contracting with growers in the mountains and down here.
Mm-hmm.
We've already, through our foraging, foraged ciders. We try to the extent we can ferment apples in geographic terms, and we feel like we've been able to notice differences in those fermentations that have some relation to terroir. So for instance, our 2014 Lost and Found was a pretty horrible year for apples around here, and really all that we could find was up in the mountains. And what that translated to was and a lot of the trees up there are on sort of marginal rocky land, and the soils up there are different. Anyway, it was a very different cider from any that we've had ever made before. It had a lot of minerality.
Nice.
It was a very stony cider. So, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I do love to think about
the terroir.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And as time goes on, it'll be something that you'll be able to mark over time, no doubt. That's really exciting. Can we talk about your expansion? Is that okay? Something?
Yeah.
Because by the time this goes live, I'm sure you're going to be full into it. So let's talk about the future of Shaxbury.
Mm-hmm.
You're at this location. Obviously, you're outgrowing it. What's the plans for the future?
So,
because you're around the world, it's just so darn exciting.
Yeah. So we're. It's always been in our business plan that we would focus on wholesale business for the first couple years, and so that's what we did.
Well, why did you take that approach, wholesale versus, because that's really different than a lot of ciders.
It's a great question. We just felt like there was so many things that we had to learn, and that we just wanted to try to simplify the picture as much as we could. And my partner David actually grew up, his family was in retail jewelry, so he's very familiar with the you know, the difficulties of having a retail shop, and for a long time it's just been the two of us, David and I, and so it was just a way to keep some focus, I guess. And we decided that also, you know, we're kind of a niche product in a niche market, in a niche category, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so we felt like we wanted to broaden our territory fairly quickly versus, you know, you talk to people who are starting breweries around here and their advice is always go deep. before you try to spread out at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, we've taken a different approach to that.
It's worked well for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're now ready to invest in some infrastructure and to have a tasting room, a place where people can come and, you know, meet us and sort of experience our brand in that way. Mm-hmm. And that feels really exciting and a little bit daunting, but
can you say what's your vision for the tasting room? Oh, that visitors, you know, but folks will be listening to this, and I'm sure it'll be open once some people will be getting this podcast for the first time.
Hopefully.
Without a doubt, Kyle.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I know it.
Try to manage expectations. Ask the question again.
The tasting room. What is the vision that you're trying to hold there? Like a room for 60 people, charcuterie on the side, kind of blending that.
We want to keep it simple. Something that I will say has inspired us from day one is the Spanish cider tradition. And you know, we've been over there many times, and they've come over here, and so I really like how casual it is there, and sort of community oriented, and you know, simple menu, simple food, but done really well. We like people to experience our cider in the context of good food. Mm-hmm. That being said, we don't really have any interest in running a restaurant, I don't think. So it's just something to balance. It'll be a simple space.
That's a good thing,
you know, and hopefully people will be able to fill growlers and see our production. I would like to have it, you know, be very open so people can see how we make stuff. Uh-huh.
And any change in the production that way right now? It's all in glass.
No. So we're using stainless steel. And
I'm sorry. In packaging.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Not in the.
We're in cans now.
You're in cans.
Well, as of we've sent our first orders out this week. Mm-hmm. They'll be hitting markets in California, Illinois, Massachusetts, Vermont, New York, D.C.
This week.
Well, in the next couple weeks.
The cans,
depending, cream. Yeah.
How exciting!
Yeah.
Wow. Is that? Did you do that with like a mobile canning, or did you?
We actually
production over.
Yeah.
At the Woodchuck.
At Woodchuck. Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lovely. Gosh, I got to get some photos of those cans. How exciting!
Yeah.
What is that? I mean, I'm excited by it, but what do you feel about it?
Really excited. I mean, mixed feelings. It's just from a production standpoint, anytime you're adding new SKUs, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
More stuff, more warehouse space.
Why did you go for cans then?
We like how casual cans are, you know, it helps us bring our price point down, so it's just more accessible, hmm. I think.
Are these 6-packs, 4-packs?
They're 4-packs of 12-ounce cans.
Okay.
So, you know, we definitely make some expensive cider, and that just reflects the work that we put into it. But we don't want anyone to not, you know, drink our cider because it's too expensive. We don't want to be, you know, exclusive. And so that's something that's really appealing about cans, is just the packaging is so much less than bottles.
Mm-hmm. It'll be easier to move around too.
Yeah, and it does. And it's just easier to think about. I mean, I just know personally, grabbing cans, they're lighter, they're easier to take on picnics and stuff. And there's just something about, you know, if I have cans of beer in my fridge and bottles of beer, if it's a bottle, I might think, well, maybe it's not a special enough dinner to open it or something like that. But I rarely have that thought when it's a can. So I just think people, it's just a more casual experience, and mm-hmm. and I think that's
exciting
important
to see how that turns around, because a lot of cideries are putting their product in cans now.
Yeah,
and it's a way.
There's definitely some quality, you know, concerns
that I
know. Well, I know Woodchuck has looked into this a lot, but. Sulfites can be an issue, oxygen can be an issue, the acidity of cider can be an issue.
In terms of the lining of the can?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just talking about that this morning with Sebastian at Flag Hill.
Yeah. So it's, the danger there is, as more ciders are going into cans, just if people are having bad cider because something has gone wrong, you know, if they get skunk cider, that's not good for the industry. And so it's just something that we need to be careful about. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it kind of ties in with exactly the goal of why you're doing it. That's more casual and like drink it already.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's in the can.
Exactly. Yeah.
Drink it. If you want to like have a cider for the long term, then get one of your more high end ciders and have that for the next day.
Sure.
But if you get the cans that day, drink it. And I know that, you know, the cans can have like a plastic lining on the inside, and I know that there's very few cans available necessarily that cider can necessarily manage, and maybe that's going to remain to be seen, that the acid might deteriorate it. Mm-hmm. And that's not an issue with beer in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, and again, oxygen,
right,
and sulfites.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just want to keep that. Anyway, I think there's just best practices, and
I think you're rocking. You know, put in the cans, and why not? I mean, that's what cider's about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it not be like thinking about that? There's a fence in front of you all the time.
Right.
It's about leaping like that bull out there and going for it, and not being like a patsy sitting going, "Oh, should I? Shouldn't I? Do, do, do." Otherwise, you wouldn't be here right now.
Right.
So.
Yeah, we're really excited about it, and we've sort of we've tested it out with a few people. There's a restaurant owner down in New York who was visiting us this week, and he took a bunch back to, they had an anniversary party for the restaurant, and he said that people were going nuts over it. So
wonderful.
I think it's going to be a good thing.
So this new facility, you're probably hoping to break ground this summer, 2016.
So it's an existing building.
Existing building. Great.
Yeah. It used to be a creamery.
Cool.
So it's this really cool old,
nice. What's the square space that you're moving into? And
so the whole building's about 10,000 square feet.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
And there's a lot of room on the property to expand.
Perfect.
Which is great. And it's
like orchard expansion over there, or maybe?
Probably not. It's right in town, or just outside of town. So we might plant some trees out front, but it's not going to be...
everything in good time.
Not going to be in.
Right.
Well, yeah. So we're looking at other orchard options around here. But yeah, it's not going to be.
Right.
You know.
Lovely.
It'll be in the same county as the facility.
Yes. Right. Of course. Well,
but
I'm sure you'll find your way around any way you can. I mean, you know, you guys aren't held by the borders of Vermont, so you certainly,
no.
You know, by that building, 10,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Who knows? When I speak to you in a year, you might be saying, "No, Rhea, you know, we're all ready."
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope. That'd be great.
Yeah. So you're probably going to get more larger tanks and everything. You use stainless and
mm-hmm.
and barrels.
And barrels.
Yeah.
And then we also have some flex tanks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For some of our smaller batch stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you work with interns or apprentices?
We do. Yep. We've gotten
UVM, the University
Middlebury.
Middlebury, okay.
We've had a couple of interns from Middlebury. We've had a lot of interest. We've been a little bit reluctant to, I mean, it's, we've been, things are changed so quickly, have been changing so quickly for us that sometimes it's easier just to keep your head down and but you know, we also want to, we love having people around. You know, we've made several hires in the past year,
mm-hmm.
and it feels really good to mm-hmm. to share the project with more people and have more people in the room. And so that's something that's been really exciting about this year, actually, is starting to build a team.
Great.
That feels really good. And we've got some really superb people.
You got great people in this area.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just an amazing... I was a Vermonter.
Yeah.
I had a license plate.
Cool.
I was an EMT in Vermont, actually, for Gant Killington. So I've...
Nice.
My heart was here at one point. And I think once a Vermonter, you're always Vermonter, right? Doesn't that work that way?
I hope so.
Yeah.
David and I are both transplants, so, you know, yeah. I think there's some rule about, I don't know how many generations you have to live here before you can, you know, get your card.
The way you guys are contributing to the state of Vermont, I think, is saying, yeah, you're rock on. And then there's always going to be, you know, the some folks, whatever.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah.
So just going back to the ciders, mm-hmm. Any other ciders that you'd like to make mention or that you're kind of looking at, you know, we're going to maybe going into this direction too? You have the Lost and Found. You have the Bass Style. Your ciders, you know what I enjoy about it? Because there's that kind of like that farmy depth to it that mm-hmm. I really, that umami,
mm-hmm.
I really dig a mm-hmm. lot. And that what really draws me to the Shaxbury cider in that way. And, of course, the Bass cider, for folks aren't familiar with that, is that more sidra,
mm-hmm.
you know, more astringent, acidic type of cider.
Mm-hmm.
So are you looking at anything that you want to be like, you know, scratching your head and saying, hey, you may want to try this too, or stylistically?
Yeah, we've tried a few new things this year. We've done a few special releases just in kegs to kind of try things out. We did a spring release this year called Millrace that went into a few markets, and what we were shooting for there was a young cider that we would only release in the spring. It was native yeast fermentation, and we actually did a malolactic, which is the first time that we've done that on purpose.
Let's talk about, just for folks who aren't familiar with malolactic, can mm-hmm. you give a synopsis of what that it means?
Yeah, it's just a fermentation where malic acid is converted into lactic acid. So it softens it up you know, adds some flavor.
And how is that converted? How do you do that conversion from...
You just pitch a culture is what we did. I mean, a lot of barrel fermented cider or aged cider will go through a malolactic just because there's the cultures in the barrel
mm-hmm.
already.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, you know, think it's a fault. Some people, you know, go to great lengths to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
All of our cider that's made in Spain goes through a malolactic fermentation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was a big success, and I would love to make more cider in that style for next year and to have that be a sort of a seasonal thing that we do. We also, for the first time, tried some barrel aging. In the past, I've kind of stayed clear of it. We actually got some barrels from our neighbor, Whistle Pig. They're just less than a mile
name, Whistle
that way.
Pig. That is too cute.
So they're a whiskey company.
Yeah.
And so we use some of their bourbon barrels, and they call it their Old World series. So they have a bunch of Madeira and Sauternes barrels. So we tried a few of those, and we're going to do some Calvados and...
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Some Calvados in the...
Mind. Yeah.
So you're doing some experimentation, you know? A lot of ciders are looking like hops.
Yeah, we're not... Not for now.
Yeah.
There's so many flavors we feel like with just apples. And that's why we've kind of steered clear of the of barreling to this point. It's just... Again, there's so many variables that we want to try to... figure out what we know first, and especially some of the lost apples that we found just have these incredible flavors, and we don't want to hide them behind anything else. And nice. So that's what we're focusing on for now.
Great. Yeah. So Colin, how often do you drink cider?
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
So, and what's your typical go-to if you're, you know, at night, sitting back and kicking back?
A lot of times I just pull something off of a tank and bring it down. I actually really like still cider. It's something that we started off thinking we were going to sell more of it than we do. It's an adjustment we've made, you know, because of market feedback, but I really love still cider. And so, yeah. I'll just, you know, pull some off the tank and bring it.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be any changes due to the Cider Act for Shaxbury?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think we'll probably feel more comfortable making higher alcohol ciders. We don't capitalize at all.
Mm-hmm. Let's just say what that means.
We don't add any sugar before fermentation.
And afterwards?
So we do have, like our canned ciders and the Farmhouse Classic and Arlo, those are all back sweetened.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that I like to make cider is to let our fermentations go completely dry and then do blending. And then if there is going to be any residual sugar, we'll add it
mm-hmm.
after the fact.
Nice.
Another experiment we did this year was a PetNat, which is short for Petit Naturel. It's a French word where you actually bottle the cider before it's finished its primary fermentation. So that was a little scary because, we like to usually let the flavors kind of settle down after the cider is finished for fermenting for a while. It turned out great. Thankfully, but
you don't have to worry about carbonation.
Yeah.
Right?
So typically, you know, so we don't, there's some cider makers that like to stop the fermentation mm-hmm. with some residual sugar. And I think that's cool from the perspective that you're just using the sugars from the apples. Mm-hmm. But, again, we like to let the fermentations go completely dry. Just so we have, I feel like we get a better bead on flavor and mm-hmm. stuff like that for blending.
Any keeving?
No, not yet. I am kind of curious about that. I've visited some French cider makers that do it, and I've visited Tom Oliver, who's really into it. Yeah, I think we'll probably, you know, try it out at some point, but we have not done any to date.
Yeah, it's exciting. Exciting, so many different things to do, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes you could go so far afield, and
yeah.
Got to come back to the main orchard and stay a little bit on task, I suppose, right?
Yeah. But we're still really figuring out what we like to do, and so you know, who knows what we'll be doing in 5 years.
Well, I know we'll be watching and cheering you on and hoping for the best with this new facility and the
tasting room.
That's going to be so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I'll let the listeners in Ciderville know when that is open and share that. So I know that it's just going to be so successful. It's really exciting. And the good thing too is that it's really available, like not just in this area, but people listening can get it in so many places in the mm-hmm. U.S., and that's going to, I'm sure, going to continue to grow. So that's exciting, too.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Colin.
Thank you.
I really enjoy speaking with Colin because he has such a calming presence, and I think that came across in this podcast, too. A very thoughtful man, quite excited for everything they're doing. He got back to me and wanted to just throw out some of these updates here, that the building is now under construction, so that tasting room and just expanding their whole production area. They do not have an opening date yet, but stay tuned, and it's recommended that you sign up for their mailing list online, as they're having also some events planned in that space for next year. So you don't want to miss out on that. And their 2015 Lost and Found That's their cider. Remember where they're gathering the apples out from the feral trees out in Vermont? Really fun word. They're very excited about that vintage. And they'll also be coming out with several new ciders in cans for 2017. I have some fun videos, a video of Colin working away, passing me a cider, and some nice photos of what is currently their area of production. So if you'd like to check that out, and some nice photographic scenes of Vermont to get a sense of that area, do go to episode 43. There's always so much going on in Ciderville, and I want to roll out of here letting you know one more thing, and that is a little note I got from my buddy Kurt, who's a big supporter of Cider Chat, just by always contacting and saying nice things. I really appreciate that. And he's also a patron, so thank you, Kurt. And let me pass this along. It's from the Boise State University on October 17th through the 21st of this year. That's a Monday through Friday. There is the Business of Craft Cider. I'll put a link to that in the show notes to this episode number 43 if you want to check that out. In the meantime, it's a beautiful day where I am. I hope the same is true for you, and that the cider flows freely and tastes as good as it looks, which is typically the case, at least for the most part, right? We're just getting better and better. This is Rio in Color, signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you in Ciderville. We'll be right back.